Okay, 3, 2.
Hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacey on Sputnik Radio. Now, coming up on the show, we talk to David Morgan, the silver guru at themorganreport.com. But first, the late Randy Pausch, who was an American professor of computer science, human-computer interaction, and design at Carnegie Mellon University, once said, "When there's an elephant in the room, introduce him." So it was that this week, a journalist introduced Fed chairwoman Janet Yellen to a rather large elephant named a $4.5 trillion balance sheet. Sounds intriguing, Stacey.
Yes. Well, Max, you know that the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States of America raised interest rates by a whole 25 basis points. So interest rates in America are now at 1%. And during the press conference afterward, which Janet Yellen famously does not like to take many questions, she was asked a question about what the Fed would do about their $4.5 trillion balance sheet, because, you know, Janet Yellen is alleging that, you know, the animal spirits have been released. It looks like positive news for the U.S. economy, so we're able to raise interest rates. And so the journalist asked, well, what happens when you start selling your balance sheet? The headline reads, "Janet Yellen takes on the Fed's $4.5 trillion balance sheet question. At some point, the Federal Reserve will have to shrink it," she says, "but we'll be taking a cautious approach to ever unwinding that if we ever do."
Yes. Well, the markets reacted interestingly. As some commentators pointed out, the market's reaction was if the Fed had cut rates by a quarter point, not raised by a quarter point. There's no connection between the Federal Reserve and the economy or the markets. It's a kabuki theater that goes on in Washington for the, it's just theater. There's no connection to the economy. The interest rates have been at zero for so long and prices are so far removed from reality at this point that it's just not relevant in any way. We're waiting for other exogenous events, not a Fed. The Fed is not driving this anymore. We're looking for something else to drive market action, probably global conflict.
It was actually Goldman Sachs's Jan Hatzius who did, in a letter to investors, I guess, say that, well, this is pretty dangerous, that the investors seem to have taken Janet Yellen's remarks wrongly, that they think that this is all, you know, like dovish, not hawkish, and that the bond markets are therefore not pricing in further, perhaps more aggressive rate rises. So I think, of course, we have to now turn to David Morgan of the Morgan Report to find out what he thinks about what is going on with these interest rate rises. Has Janet Yellen done the right thing?
Well, she's done what she had to do. Looking at the 2-year note and the 10-year before the announcement, the market had already priced in what the yield needed to be. So the Fed actually follows. Now, you know, at my age, I've watched from, you know, what took place prior to Volcker and then with Volcker, everything else. So I've seen the bond market go all over the place. But basis the fact that the market has more control than even the Fed, and they have a lot more control than they used to in the 70s. Nonetheless, the market already priced it in. So as far as I'm concerned, you are both correct that after the announcement, ho-hum, almost everybody, it's almost 100% of us, meaning mainstream and alternative, decided that the Fed would increase a whole whopping, you know, 25 basis points. So that's in there. Now where do we go?
Right. Well, the reaction in the precious metals was on the upside. You know, we've seen this many, 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 many times before, what I call the Charlie Brown and Lucy phenomenon, where Charlie Brown tries to kick the football and Lucy pulls it away at the last second. That's been pretty much the story of precious metals the last 5 or 6 years. There's a huge fundamental and technical reason to buy precious metals, but at the last second, just as everyone's loaded the boat, in comes the gold reserve banks to undermine prices.
Exactly, Max. And what we've seen since the announcement is, you know, gold's had a pretty strong rally here. But you got to remember, if we just look at the last 30 days, gold was at about 1255 and we dropped into the 1200 range. And now we're up to about 1220 or so as we do the interview. which means, as far as I'm concerned, there's probably more downside. There was a definite divergence between the commitment of traders on the gold side and the silver side. Silver certainly is signaling more weakness ahead, basis the COT. Gold, not so much. I think it gives the powers that be more time to short gold as they let it rise for a while. In other words, taking the football away again.
You mentioned silver, and silver's been trading in quite a tight range, up and down for the past 6 or so years, you know, never going really much higher than $20, $21 an ounce, down to $16, $17 an ounce, within that range. What do you call this in a technical term that it's staying there? Is that a good sign? Is it a bad sign? You know, what happens to silver investors from this point?
Great question. Stacy, you didn't know me in those days, but back when I was younger and doing triathlons, I said the bigger the base, the larger the move. And if I was referring to the flat line, basically, of $5 silver for almost 20 years, and I said, once this thing moves, you are not going to believe where it's going to go. And I think that's been fulfilled partially, but I think it's going far higher. So it's a strong base. It's a little erratic. I mean, it's not flatline like it did, you know, between, let's say, 1983 and 20 years out, 2003. But we are building a strong base. And once we get through a couple of levels, 25, 26 being one, and through the 35, then we're on our way. But there is overhead resistance this time, which means that there's people that are still upset, people that, you know, always have a comment for me that's on the negative side because they bought silver at 30 and it's all my fault or whatever. But nonetheless, it will, in my strong, studied opinion, take off at some point. And it's not going to be a rocket ship straight up initially, again, overhead resistance. But once we get through, say, the 40 level, and depending what gold's doing, and as you alluded to, maybe there's a conflict worldwide. I mean, we are going to see something we've never experienced. I mean, the irony is that the safest investment perceived is the U.S. debt market, which is the most unrealistic expectation of all time. I mean, we're guaranteed not to get your money back, guaranteed not to get your money back. And yet the counterpart of that is the precious metals, and there's so few that are participating in that market.
Yeah, well, you know, let's talk about this Charlie Brown and Lucy kind of phenomenon, its relationship to precious metals, and we'll mix in a little behavioral economics here. The demand for gold and silver is insatiable. You know, there's people around the world, they'll never stop buying gold and silver. It's been money for 5,000 years. There's always going to be demand for it. And if left unmolested, prices will always go up. So traders, you mentioned the COT report, the professional traders who are in this market, they just wait for these people to show up on the buy side as they have done for 1,000 years. And then they make the rounds with a few phone calls and they come in there. We know from reports they just clip them. They just take the money and run. And then they use that money to go buy leveraged bond trades. So that's never going to stop. If anything, under Trump, it'll continue because he's making it easier for these guys to borrow even more, David.
Could be. I just put out something on my Twitter feed yesterday, Max, from Reuters, and it said, you know, that they're going to look into the U.S. government, forget the gentleman's name, but they're going to look harder at the CME and what the rules are, and are there things there that they can do away with, basically. I read it as a negative, not a positive, but we don't know. But it works until it doesn't. I think there is a potential, and we've already seen it a couple times, where the physical market does dominate the paper paradigm. But, you know, you, above anybody, Max, when you came out with, you know, buy silver, take down JP Morgan, I mean, actually, in reality, if enough people participated, it certainly could have put some strains on them. But nonetheless, it's sad that what you said I agree with. But when you look at the insatiable amount of desire for money, it's really financial stability in most normal people. And what that means is if you look at the paper paradigm of trillions and trillions, really quadrillions when you talk about the derivatives market, yet if you take all financial assets and exclude real estate, gold represents 1% of the total market and silver represents 0.02% of the total market. So if we could just get another, you know, double that, if we get 2% of the world's population to say, I want physical gold, I want it in my pocket, and I don't trust anybody because the banking system's so corrupt and so is the brokerage system, we would have a nonstop rise in the gold price for quite some time. And silver is ridiculous when you think of 0.02% of all financial assets are in the physical silver market. When they trade, basically every 2 days the equivalent of the global mining supply of silver every 2 days. I mean, there's a disconnect between, as you said at the beginning of the show, the physical reality and these financial markets that are nothing more than kabuki theater.
Well, before you out there, by the way, listening to this podcast, get involved in the silver market, do understand that David Morgan is a former test pilot and did use a test pilot crazy fast military sort of planes, and he can deal with the ups and downs, because of course you mentioned financial crises and things like that. And back in the financial crash of 2007, 2008, 2009, there was a period when silver fell by 60% in the course of just a few weeks. So it does go up and down. But coming back to the elephant in the room of the Fed's balance sheets, there is a $4.5 trillion Fed balance sheet. What is this going to do to international markets, paper markets, debt markets, currency markets, should they ever start unloading some of that?
Well, Stacey, as you know, it's full of crap. I mean, what they put on their balance sheet initially during the 2008 financial crisis was about a ton of unsecured mortgages that had no validity whatsoever. They were dog poo-poo wrapped up in a pretty package. And the Fed took that on and issued, U.S. debt, the most sacrosanct thing that you could own. And so it exchanged dog doo-doo for what's perceived and still is as a very, very safe investment. So if they ever really tell the truth, which is what's the crux of this whole issue. I mean, from a philosophical perspective, we've been living in a big lie for so long that most people don't even know they're living in a lie. But if the truth ever comes out of what's really on the Fed's balance sheet, it wouldn't be at the level it's at. It would be marked to market, and it probably worth about 25% of what it is right now. The same thing in the debt markets. I mean, the best trade you could have ever made in my lifetime would have been selling gold January 21st, 1980, and going to the long bond at like 15, 17%, whatever it was in that range, and held it for 30 years or more, or rolled it over so that you have the long bond the whole way. But that's ending. All markets ebb and flow. All markets go up and down, including the silver market. What most people don't know is the massive amount of money that's out there has to go into the debt markets because they can't go into the gold market. It would put gold at, 80,000 an ounce. I mean, do the math. You can't. So everyone's swapping debt back and forth between sovereign wealth funds and the nation states and pretending it's valid when it's invalid.
Yeah, that's all true. You know, the numbers are compelling. You know, getting back for a second to what you were saying about, I mean, if the base of folks who currently own silver, own gold, doubled from the less than 1% of investable assets to 2%, you know, right there, you'd have a pretty significant move on the upside. But, you know, looking at the big picture here, people don't think about saving. You know, people look at economics and money in terms of how much they can borrow. And they know that the way the system is rigged now, the way the financialization of the system is, that being in fiat paper gives you the ability to borrow lots of credit and finance a lifestyle, particularly in the U.S., on debt, on credit. People aren't looking for ways to save. If they were looking for a way to save, they would pick gold and silver, but they're not. They're looking for a way to finance their lifestyle, and gold and silver do not provide that, David.
No, I agree. I think that's a lesson that's going to be learned after the fact. I mean, there's an expression that once the ship is sunk, everyone knows how it might have been saved. And to use a pun here intentionally, I mean, savings is how capital formation is supposed to develop, and that's how you actually build a strong economic system. But those days are bygones, and I think we're going to have to go through another great or greater depression type of scenario. It'll look different than the 30s, but it'll be there nonetheless, and that's going to be the lesson that the next generation learns until, you know, a couple generations go by and they forget it and repeat the lessons of history.
Well, fair enough. That's a good way to end the podcast. David Morgan of themorganreport.com. Thanks so much for being on.
Max and Stacy, thank you.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacy Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Thanks to our guest, David Morgan of themorganreport.com. Until next week, bye, y'all.